Okay, so let's unpack this. We've all seen it happen, right? A small town gets news that some big piece of infrastructure, a new highway, maybe a factory is coming.
Right. And it's always a double-edged sword. There's this huge potential for economic growth, for new money.
But also this very real threat of erasing the character of the place, the very reason people live there.
Exactly. So today we're doing a deep dive into how a small city can try to get ahead of that. This is for you if you've ever wondered how a tiny community can actually capture those rewards without, destroying itself in the process.
Our mission today is centered on Hurrah, Oklahoma. We've got their 2018 comprehensive plan and a strategic economic framework, and we're laying them out side by side.
And to give you some context, Hurrah is, it's a small town. Back in 2016, the population was just over 5,700 people. Median household income was around $57,000.
So by all metrics, we're talking about a small, pretty fiscally conservative, family-focused community.
Very much so. The plan makes it clear they value their rural atmosphere, their schools, outdoor activities, that whole vibe.
And their entire future is about to pivot on this one massive development catalyst that's landing right on their doorstep. It's called the Northeast Oklahoma County Loop.
It's a 21-mile turnpike corridor, and the key number here is three. Three planned interchanges right inside Hurrah's city limits.
Three interchanges in a town of 5,700 people. I mean, that's an immediate seismic shock to the system.
It really is. So the central challenge for Hurrah becomes crystal clear. How do you strategically manage that inevitable intense pressure from developers?
And not just manage it, but actually harness it to fund the things you desperately need, like fixing their water and sewer systems.
All without sacrificing that small-town identity the community holds so dear. It's a huge balancing act.
Because if you don't have a plan, that turnpike just becomes strip malls and traffic jams.
And none of that new tax revenue actually flows back to where it's needed.
It looks like Hurrah is trying to build a very specific governance machine. One that's designed to turn visitors, specifically families coming in for youth sports, into a recurring revenue stream for public services.
They're essentially building a blueprint for how a small city can make tourists pay for police cars and water treatment plants.
It's a fascinating strategy,
Yeah.
but it has to start with a really brutal look at their own map.
That's right. You can't build a sales tax revenue machine if you don't have any land zoned for stores.
And that's where their land use blueprint is so critical. Right now, Hurrah is. It's overwhelmingly rural. If you look at their current land use, 42% of the city is just vacant land.
42%. And the biggest developed category is what they call rural estate. Low density residential, that's another 33%.
And rural estate isn't just a zoning label, right?
Right.
For them, it represents the core identity they're trying to hold on to.
Absolutely. It means larger lots, maybe 5 acres or more. It's the properties that maintain the whole feel of the town.
But the flip side of that is commercially, they are completely starved. The sources show only 2% of the city is zoned for local services.
And a shocking 0%, zero, for what they call regional services.
Which perfectly explains that public sentiment they found in their surveys. Residents were saying they have to leave town to shop.
Of course they do. You can't fund a modern city if your citizens are driving to the next town over to spend their money. So the goal isn't just to add commercial space, it has to be surgical.
So the future plan. It keeps that commitment to the rural feel. They actually push the rural estate designation up to 54% of future land use.
But, and this is the big but, they dramatically expand the tax base right where that new turnpike is landing. They're targeting 8% for local services and 3% for regional.
So from 0 to 3% for regional services, that is a massive structural pivot in land use.
And those new service areas are precisely where they plan to build out three physical anchors to draw people in. First, they focus on downtown.
The existing identity anchor.
Right, it needs some revitalization, some infill, better pedestrian connections.
I found a great detail in the plan here. They point out that downtown and Heritage Park are only about 3/4 mile apart, but that walk is broken up right now.
And the plan says building that walkability is part of preserving the quality of life. It's not just about cars.
Okay, so that's anchor one. What's number two?
Number two is the economic engine, the turnpike nodes, specifically the interchange at 23rd Street. This is their designated economic capture zone.
This is where they want the hotels, the fast food, the retail.
Exactly. Auto-oriented development that generates sales tax. That's its entire purpose.
And the third anchor is this big play on parks and wellness. They already have a 75-acre sports complex, but they're proposing a huge expansion for a heritage park.
A huge expansion. It's about 27 acres now,
right,
with the potential to add another 105. And they see this as both a quality of life perk for residents and the primary economic lure for visitors.
But before any of that can happen, they have this critical constraint they have to deal with.
And what's fascinating here is how self-aware the plan is about this. They know the sequencing is a huge risk. They know this growth depends entirely on infrastructure they just don't have yet.
And the citizen feedback they got on the existing services it's brutal. The surveys show only about 42% of residents are satisfied with their water utilities.
And it's even worse for wastewater, just under 40%. That's an urgent systemic failure.
So if they just let developers run wild without fixing that first?
It could be a disaster, a development moratorium, or worse, an environmental crisis. So the plan is explicit. Capacity fees, master planning, system improvements, all of that must come before the rapid growth.
That shaky foundation, it creates this huge execution challenge.
But it also gives them the ironclad justification for why their economic plan has to be so financially aggressive. They need serious, dedicated cash flow to fix it.
Okay, so this is where we see the shift, right? They're not just hoping for general growth from the turnpike. They are betting the farm on one specific type of visitor.
Youth sports tourism. They treat it almost like a predictable, stabilized demand sector, like a factory with measurable output.
And that idea of measured demand is really the core thesis here.
It is. A youth sports tournament gives you predictable spikes in demand for hotels, restaurants, gas stations. It's not just a vague hope that people will show up.
So for a developer, that massively reduces their risk. They know that for 30 weekends a year, the hotels will be full because of tournaments that are scheduled months in advance.
To really get the scale of this market, the sources point to a nearby complex in a town called Choctaw. It's the Bouse Sports Complex.
And they use it as a competitor case study. What does the USSA data from that complex tell us?
It's jaw-dropping. We're talking about the United States Specialty Sports Association. These are huge operators. One of them, Big Show Productions, runs multiple state tournaments over a single weekend.
So this isn't just a few local teams playing on a Saturday.
No, no. This is regional, multi-day, multi-state events. The total economic impact figures they cite for that area range from $9 million up to $11 million annually.
Okay, I have to jump in here and ask the question that I know someone listening is thinking. Are they really hinging the future of their multi-million dollar water system on how many kids play softball in the next town over? I mean, isn't that incredibly speculative?
It would be, except the demand is already validated. What the data shows is the sheer volume of organized visitors. That one operator, Big Show Productions, they cite up to 450,000 players across their events.
Wow.
That kind of predictable, repetitive traffic, it stabilizes occupancy rates for hotels and retail almost instantly. It takes away the uncertainty that usually scares developers away from small towns.
And that leads to this key insight in the plan.
Yeah.
The spillover problem.
Right. Hurrah realized they were basically paying for their neighbor's growth. The other towns host the events, but they don't have enough hotels or restaurants to capture the spending.
So the visitors sleep, eat, and buy gas in the surrounding communities.
Exactly. And now, with the new turnpike access, Hurrah has a chance to internalize that, to make sure that visitor money stays in Hurrah.
And they already have a proof of concept.
Yes.
The market is right there.
Yes. Hurrah's own sports complex is already hosting USSSA events. We found records for one softball tournament in June 2024. It generated over $4,000 in entry fees alone that weekend.
So the market is proven, but they need that final piece of the puzzle.
They need a bulletproof governance structure to capture, manage, and dedicate all that revenue.
Which brings us to the centerpiece of the whole plan, the governance mechanism. It's designed specifically to ring-fence those visitor dollars for Hurrah's most critical needs.
This is where the strategic genius really is. They propose creating the Hurrah Parks and Recreation Authority, the HPRA, as a public trust.
And why a public trust? What does that structure do?
It immediately creates separation from the city's general fund. It lets it operate like a business with its own accounting, its own debt financing. It insulates its revenue from the regular political fights at city council.
So the council can't just raid the HPRA's bank account when they're having a tough budget year.
Precisely. It creates stability. But a new sports complex, new water lines, that's all expensive. So how does the HPRA pay for it all without raising taxes on the current residents? That was the promise.
Right.
They use two main financial tools. The first is tax increment financing, TIF districts. They propose this specifically for the 23rd Street Corridor, where all that new commercial development is planned.
Okay, hold on. TIF. That's a term that sounds complicated. Can you break that down for us?
Sure. Think of it like this. You draw a box on the map around the new Turnpike commercial area.
Yeah.
Before anything is built, let's say the property tax in that box generates $100,000 a year.
Okay.
That 100 grand keeps going to the city, same as always. But then the new hotel and gas station get built, and the tax revenue jumps to, say, $500,000. That extra $400,000, that's the increment.
Oh, okay.
And the TIF captures only that new growth. That money is then dedicated to paying off the public improvements, the new roads, the water pipes that made the growth possible in the first place.
So the growth literally pays for itself. That's clever. But the real political genius is how they then turn the money from the sports complex into direct funding for city services.
That's the surplus reinvestment model, and it's critical. After the HPRA pays all its bills, its operating costs, debt service, all of that, the plan says it has to allocate a percentage of the leftover surplus to specific public purposes.
And doing that avoids any legal issues about a public entity making a profit.
Exactly. And those public purposes are, conveniently, the city departments that need the most help.
So the fire department, the police department.
Precisely. Surplus funds are earmarked for concrete things. Funding the fire department for EMS readiness at events. Helping the police department with security and traffic control. Contributing to roads and bridges, even supporting the schools through recreation partnerships.
It directly links the money spent by a family from out of town at a softball tournament to, you know, tangible improvements in local quality of life.
And that is a very powerful political story for the city council to tell residents.
It lets them say, we brought in all this gross without raising your property taxes. And the tourists driving off that new turnpike paid for new police equipment and better fire service.
And this strategic thinking even extends to land they want to preserve, not just develop. They're looking at a site called the Cookie Land site, 108 acres that the Turnpike Authority bought.
And Hurrah is coordinating with them to try and get the leftover land.
Right, to use it for conservation and trail connectivity. So they're actively balancing the intense commercial development at the nodes with deliberate rural preservation on the edges. It's a real tightrope walk.
If we pull back and connect this to the bigger picture, the whole playbook really hinges on one fundamental trade-off.
It does. They are converting vacant rural land into these high-octane sales tax-generating commercial zones right at the turnpike interchanges.
And then using that revenue to save the existing quality of life and fix their broken infrastructure.
So this really raises an important question, one for you, the citizen, the taxpayer, to think about. Hurrah's plan is so clearly guided by these deeply held community values, chief among them being this rural feel.
Right.
But the financial structure they've designed, the TIFs and the HPRA, it requires them to maximize sales tax revenue. And that means building auto-oriented regional services. Think massive parking lots, chain hotels, big box stores right at those turnpike nodes.
The tension is baked right into the plan.
It is. So here's the thought to leave you with. Will the highly effective, fiscally responsible governance structure they designed to fund their future, will it inevitably undermine the very rural character they set out to preserve?
The success of the plan requires maximizing the very things that are often the opposite of a small town feel.
Yeah.
That is the tension you will have to watch as this blueprint unfolds.
They've built the machine. Now they have to see if the machine preserves the town or if it changes it forever.
That's an outstanding, provocative note to end on. Thank you for joining us for the deep dive. We'll be back next time with another stack of sources to unpack.